听力课堂，听 class.com。
英语口译实务三集，第二盒。
Section 2, Text for Interpretation, Passage 1, Chinese to English Interpretation, Text Interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
你也许听说过深圳，但是我还是想借此机会向各位介绍一下这座美丽的新城市。深圳地处广东省南部沿海，面积2020平方公里，全市人口400多万。深圳是邓小平倡导创立的中国第一个经济特区。经过20多年的发展，深圳已成为中国主要的经济中心之一，为未来城市发展奠定基础。深圳富本土风情，自然风光与人文文化荟萃一处。作为中国主要的对外贸易和国际交往口岸，其城市建设取得了辉煌成就，不仅造就了一个良好的投资环境，同时也取得了一个优美的旅游环境。深圳先后被评为国家花园城市和环境保护的典范城市。2000年11月，深圳在美国首府华盛顿被评为国际花园城市。随着经济的迅速发展，旅游业也欣欣向荣，特别是在建设最佳旅游城市的活动中，深圳的旅游业走上了系统化和正规化的道路。旅游业的环境日臻完美，从前深圳不过是个边防小镇，而如今深圳已成为一片神奇的土地，已建成各具风格的旅游景点40多处，星级宾馆酒店100多家。当你畅游这座花园城市，它的现代风情、迷人魅力和万象景观将给您的深圳之旅留下美好回忆。深圳的商业供应网络十分发达，大型商业零售网点达1000多个，大型商厦、小商品市场和一系列各具特色的超级市场、便利店、精品店、服装街、电器街、工艺品街等商业街星罗棋布，荟萃了全国各省市和世界各地的名优特新商品。各商家对商品质量的承诺保证和优良的售后服务，让你在深圳购物定能买得满意。吃是深圳人的一大生活主题，充满诱惑力的大小酒楼食街不仅吸引了到深圳的国内外游客，就是来深圳多年和已定居深圳的人也兴趣盎然。粤菜是中国饶有特色的菜系之一，人们早就有食在广东之说，而且在这里人们还有机会尝遍全国各地的珍馐美味呢。
Passage 2 English to Chinese Interpretation Text Interpreting Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese. If you visit only one place in South Africa, make it Cape Town.It is reputed to be South Africa's most beautiful and most visited city. You will find Cape Town nestling below Table Mountain, which stands sentinel over the city. Few cities in the world possess its beauty and style. Even though Cape Town is relatively small, there is plenty to see and do. The architecture is a mix of Dutch and English colonial styles. Attractions include the Castle of Good Hope, built in the 17th century, and the District 6 Museum. The city is a happy collision of many things. The Indian and Atlantic oceans meet here, as well as vineyards, beaches, and all types of Mediterranean cuisine, all cradled by Table Mountain. It is also the second biggest city in South Africa for business, right behind Johannesburg, but infinitely better looking and more relaxed. The city has often been likened to San Francisco, but Cape Town has what San Francisco can never have, its spectacular mountain. Table Mountain is key to Cape Town's identity. Wherever you are, you will see the huge flat-topped icon overlooking the buildings in the city. It dominates the city in a way that is difficult to imagine until you visit. In the afternoon, when creeping clouds spill over the mountain, the whole town seems to shiver and hold its breath. Depending on which side of the mountain you live, it even dictates when the sun will rise and set. Many ambitious visitors attempt to climb the mountain, but by far the most relaxing route to the top is via the cable car, which goes through a 360-degree turn on its way to the top to provide a dizzying panoramic view. Cape Town is surprisingly small. A stroll through the lovely city centre reveals vestiges of Cape Town's three centuries. While the British and Dutch may have colonised South Africa, thankfully their influence did not make it to the food. And everywhere, whether you're eating outdoors at one of the country's best restaurants or sipping wine atop Table Mountain, you sense, correctly, that this is South Africa's most urbane, civilized city. Modern South Africa was born here, and today it is a meeting place for Africa and the rest of the world, which gives its own particular vibrancy. Cape Town is home to the country's best museums, restaurants, and hotels. The diverse cultural heritage is evident when one visits the various national museums and sites such as the Castle Good Hope, dating back to the Dutch East Indies Company, the South African Cultural History Museum, the District 6 Museum. Section 4. Interpretation Practice. Note-taking and gap-filling. Listen to the tape and take any necessary notes. The unparalleled beauty of the nature inspired the U.S. government to create the world's first national park. For a young country just coming of age in the early 1800s, the discovery of Yellowstone helped define America's identity with its vast, bold landscape. Today, Yellowstone's identity is closely associated with its powerful natural geysers such as the ever-present Old Faithful. Old Faithful erupts about every 85 minutes. It's 130,140 feet tall. It's magnificent. The incredible geysers and picture postcard landscape brought Yellowstone its fame. But today, its wildlife population is just as popular. Gap filling. Listen to the tape and fill in the blanks with the words missing.
To explore Robson Street is to experience the heart of the most beautiful street in the city. Home to unique boutiques and some of the world's most famous designers, Robson Street fills with an air of excitement. Those who delve into the history of Robson Street are surprised to find that its reputation as a vibrant shopping and dining district is more than 100 years old. This fascinating street was named for John Robson, Premier of British Columbia from 1889 to 1892. Its commercial traditions date from 1895, when train tracks were laid along it, with a wide variety of small shops springing up to serve Vancouver's rapidly growing population. In modern times, as its popularity has soared to dramatic heights, the character of Robson Street has continued to evolve. Today, Robson and its intriguing side streets boast a large number of brand names, but there also remains ample evidence of the small, independently operated businesses that echo the early days of Robson and offer a wide range of unusual and artistic goods.
Passage interpreting. Passage 1. Chinese to English interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
明天我们将去游览黄山，我想先向各位简要介绍一下。黄山位于安徽省的南部，它宏伟庄严，风光迷人，是中国最著名的风景区。1990年，联合国教科文组织世界遗产委员会宣布黄山为世界自然文化遗产。黄山是一个奇迹，在154平方公里的面积上，群峰耸立，许多山峰的名字是名如其形，莲花、光明顶和天都是其中最主要的三个，都高达1800米以上。天阴时，这些高山隐现在雾霭中，如虚幻一般；天晴时，则尽展其威严与壮丽。黄山的颜色和形态随四季的更替而不断变化。春天，盛开的鲜花色彩缤纷，点缀着四处的山坡。夏天，您可以看到青绿的山峰一座连一座，泉水在欢乐地流着。秋天把整个黄山装扮成红紫相间的世界，正是枫树火红的季节。冬天则把群山变成一个冰与雾的世界，到处是银枝银石。因此自古以来就一直有许多游客来到黄山，探求其神秘，惊叹其美景。人们渐渐地总结出黄山的四大特征和吸引力：奇松、怪石、云海和温泉。由于地貌独特，黄山的气候呈垂直变化，山上的植物也明显的呈垂直分布。山顶、山腰和山脚的植物分居寒带、温带和亚热带。黄山共有1500多种植物，其中树木占了三分之一。因此，黄山是从事中国植物研究的重要地方。黄山也是种类繁多的动物群的栖息地。黄山的天气四季宜人，由于云海常常遮住太阳，炎热的天气从来不会长久，这就使得黄山成为理想的避暑胜地。黄山看起来清新年轻，但却有着悠久的历史。古代的书籍、诗歌、绘画和雕刻都是很好的证明。李白并非歌颂黄山的唯一的诗人，唐代诗人贾岛和杜荀鹤也曾来此吟诗作赋。在唐以后的各个朝代中，不断有人游览黄山，在诗中表达他们的赞美之情。明朝伟大的地理学家和旅行家徐霞客专门写了两本关于黄山的游记，一代又一代人的题词随处可见。 千姿百态黄山云，四天风，清凉世界，其美和独具魅力的风景，这仅仅是其中的几个而已。这些诗句配上优美的书法，不仅仅是装饰品，它们本身就是一道迷人风景。
Passage 2. English to Chinese interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Do you know that in Florida it's illegal to wear swimwear while singing in a public place? And in Alabama, it's against the law to play dominoes on Sunday. And don't be fooled into thinking that it's just America that has some weird laws.In Italy, it's an offense not to have a smile on your face while in the city of Milan, unless you're visiting someone in hospital or attending a funeral. Foreign customs and behavior can always seem strange, sometimes frightening even. However, to fully enjoy your holiday and avoid conflict, it is important to understand other cultures and respect them. The way we dress is important.Most countries are now used to tourists, and it certainly isn't necessary to don a sari in India or a yashmak in Tunisia. But wherever you are, it's better not to offend the locals by strolling through the streets in just a pair of shorts or a bikini, unless it's clearly accepted by everyone. Be aware that sometimes offense can lead to anger, assault, and even imprisonment. For example,In Barbados, it's illegal for anyone, including children, to dress in camouflage clothing. Food is another area that can cause problems. Many countries, particularly those in the Far East, enjoy a different kind of cuisine. For example, they love eating meat that we consider highly inappropriate. When visiting such a country, it is important to remember that you are their guest.And should not offend anyone for doing something they regard as perfectly normal. In Singapore, smoking in public buildings, littering, spitting, chewing gum on public transport are civic crimes and attract instant fines. There are also differences with gestures and body language. Giving the thumbs up in Saudi Arabia is very much offensive, no matter how pleased you are with someone.Pointing used to be thought of as rude in Britain and many other countries, especially with the index finger. And things can get very confusing if you nod your head at people in Greece, Turkey, or Bulgaria, as to some this actually means no. It is illegal to make rude gestures or swear in public in Bahrain and Kenya, and for doing so, you could face a severe fine.Another important tip is to learn some of the local language, even if it's just a few sentences from a phrasebook. Showing that you've made some effort can go a long way towards better relations with people overseas. Think how you might react if someone from another country was pointing and shouting at you in a language you didn't understand. Most people, regardless of which country they are from,are normally friendly and welcoming, as long as they're given the right signals.
Unit 4. Culture and Education. Section 1. Dialogue for Interpretation. Text Interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following conversation alternatively into English and Chinese.
Bravo!Though I know little about the background of the play, speaking from an artistic angle, the choreography, stage scenery, lighting, and music are just fabulous. In particular, the young dancer's performance was wonderful.
多谢。作为中央芭蕾舞团奉献给中国文化年的第一份厚礼，红色娘子军是我国芭蕾舞剧的经典剧目之一。 它可以说是既带有中国的传统舞蹈特色，又吸纳了欧洲古典芭蕾的精华。
You've taken the words out of my mouth. Just as the director of a local opera house commented, the ballet is China's Giselle. Speaking of the Chinese culture year, could you enlighten me a little?
中国文化年是中加文化年的组成部分。前年在两国领导人的倡议下，决定于今年在两国互办一系列的文化交流活动。文化年的交流项目共计200多个，涉及的领域包括文学艺术、教育、科技、体育、民俗和旅游。中加文化年是迄今为止中国与外国开展的最大规模的文化交流活动。
You know, I am a culture vulture. Anything foreign instantly arouses my interest. Could you recommend some events that I might go to?
没问题。可是活动太多了，我真不知从何说起呀。啊，有了，你可以去看看青铜人之谜、四川考古展和走进中国、中国当代生活艺术展。当然，还有根据奥斯卡奖提名影片改编的同名芭蕾舞剧《大红灯笼高高挂》。从这些活动中，你不仅可以领略古老中国文化的恒久魅力，又可感受到当代中国文化的创造活力。
That's great. I just can't wait to go. I believe activities like these will surely help promote the understanding and friendship between the Canadian and Chinese peoples.
Section 2. Text for Interpretation. Passage 1. Chinese to English Interpretation. Text Interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
下午好。现在由我来介绍一下中国的世界文化遗产。中国是一个古老而文明的国家，有悠久的历史、灿烂的文化、壮丽的山河。早在100多万年至40-50万年以前，中国大陆就有了古人类的足迹。元谋人、蓝田人、北京人就生活在这块土地上。约公元前21世纪，中国第一个朝代夏出现了。自此，中国有了文字记载的历史。公元前221年，秦始皇结束了战国时期的诸侯割据，建立了中国历史上第一个中央集权的封建专制的多民族国家秦。此后至20世纪初的2000多年间，中国又经历了汉、三国、晋、南北朝、隋、唐、五代、宋、元、明清等封建王朝。历史善变，朝代更迭，历史长河在这块古老的土地上遗存了极为丰富的名胜古迹、恢宏的古代建筑群、浩如烟海的古文物。为后人考察和研究中国古代的文化与历史提供了真实的依据。中国地处亚洲大陆东部太平洋西岸，在总面积960万平方公里的国土上，自然与地理环境多姿多彩，东西南北风光迥异，山川江河蕴藏着极为丰富的动植物资源。良好的地理环境造就了无数的天然名胜。 漫长的历史为中华民族留下了丰厚而珍贵的文化遗产和自然遗产。它不仅属于中华民族，也是全人类的宝贵财富。目前这些文化和自然遗产正日益受到破坏的威胁，一方面因年久腐变所致，同时变化中的社会和经济条件使情况恶化，造成更加难以避免的损害或破坏。这是中国和全世界正在共同经受着的困扰。中国自1985年签署加入世界遗产公约，从1987年至2003年，中国被列入世界遗产名录共29项，他们是文化遗产部分20项，万里长城、故宫、莫高窟、秦始皇陵兵马俑坑、周口店北京人遗址、承德避暑山庄及周围的庙宇、孔庙、孔林、孔府、武当山古建筑群、布达拉宫、平遥古城、苏州古典园林、丽江古城、颐和园、天坛、大足石刻、青城山都江堰、皖南古村落、龙门石窟、云岗石窟、明清皇家陵寝。自然遗产部分4项：武陵源、九寨沟、黄龙、云南三江并流。文化与自然双重遗产4项：泰山、黄山、峨眉山、乐山大佛、武夷山。文化景观遗产1项：庐山。谢谢诸位，下面请大家提问。
Passage 2: English to Chinese Interpretation. Text Interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Welcome to the British Museum. Before we start our tour, I'd like to brief you on the history of this world-renowned treasure house of knowledge. The origins of the British Museum lie in the collection of Sir Hans Sloane, 1660 to 1753, an eminent physician and naturalist. Sloane bequeathed his museum of 80,000 objects, his herbarium and library of George II for the British nation, in return for payment of £20,000 to his daughters. By the British Museum Act of 1753, Parliament provided for funds to be raised by public lottery. On the 15th of January 1759, the British Museum opened to the public. With the exception of 2 world wars, when parts of the collection were evacuated, it has remained open ever since, gradually increasing its opening hours and moving from an attendance of perhaps 5,000 a year to more than 5 million today. From its beginnings, the British Museum was a new type of institution. Governed by a body of trustees responsible to Parliament, its collections belonged to the nation, and admission was free and open to all. Entry was directed to be given to all studious and curious persons, and throughout the museum's history, public enjoyment has been linked with scholarship and education. From the first, a reading room was provided in which readers could consult the library and learned staff were engaged to curate and catalogue the collections. The foundation collections largely consisted of books, manuscripts and natural history, with some antiquities and ethnography. The museum was first housed in a 17th century mansion, which was quickly outgrown by the rapidly expanding collections. In 1823, the gift to the nation by George IV of his father's substantial library, the King's Library, provided the catalyst for the construction of the present neoclassical building designed by Sir Robert Smirke. The first phase was largely completed in 1852, followed in 1857 by the round reading room, erected in Smirke's central courtyard. The 19th century was a time of popular expansion, and particularly on public holidays, the museum attracted great crowds of all ages and backgrounds. While the scholarly work continued with the publication of the museum's great series of learned catalogues, many curators took an interest in broadening the museum's appeal through lectures and improved display. The first popular synopsis, guide to the collections, was published in 1808. The museum was much involved in excavation abroad. Its Assyrian collections formed the basis for the decipherment of cuneiform, just as the acquisition of the Rosetta Stone has resulted in the unlocking of Egyptian hieroglyphic script. In the 1880s, the natural history collections were moved to a new building in South Kensington, later to become the Natural History Museum. The 20th century, particularly the second half, saw a great expansion in public services. The first summary guide was published in 1903, and a sales counter was introduced in 1912. The first guide lecturer was appointed in 1911. A full-time exhibition designer was appointed in 1964, followed by an active program of gallery refurbishment. An education service was set up in 1970 and a publishing company in 1973. King Edward VII's galleries, formally opened in 1914, the Duveen Gallery, 1939 and 1962, and the New Wing, 1978, provided additional public facilities, offices, display areas, and library storage. This, however, did not solve the museum's lack of space, and proposals continued to be made for a further transfer of collections. In 1973, the library departments became part of a new organization, the British Library, leaving Bloomsbury for a new building at St. Pancras in 1998. The Queen Elizabeth II Great Court, opened in December 2000, was created in part of the space vacated by the British Library. At its center is the restored reading room. Thanks. Any questions?
Section 4. Interpretation Practice. Note-taking and gap-filling. Listen to the tape and take any necessary notes. The legendary entertainer Bob Hope has died just 2 months after celebrating his 100th birthday. He was one of America's best-beloved entertainers, whose career spanned much of the 20th century. Bob Hope was a star in vaudeville, on radio and television, and in the movies. A master of the one-liner, he honed his comedy skills performing in live theater in the 1920s. In 1938, he headed west to Hollywood, where he hosted a radio show and appeared in scores of movies. Among the most memorable were seven comedies with singer Bing Crosby, which included Road to Rio and Road to Morocco. Bob Hope also became a fixture on American television. He brought a lift to generations of men and women in the U.S. military stationed far from home. Gap filling. Listen to the tape and fill in the blanks with the words missing.
It is my great pleasure to open the 25th session of the World Heritage Committee. I have the challenging task to chair this committee session and to guide World Heritage during the next 6 months. Let me begin by thanking our former chairperson, Mr. Peter King from Australia, for his immense personal commitment during the last year. In 2001, we have made a lot of progress for the future of World Heritage, and I would like to highlight some of the major issues. The World Heritage List should represent the democratic idea of sharing our heritage with all of humankind. Every individual will find a site on the list with which it can relate and identify. The convention is there to contribute to a better understanding of the cultural and natural diversity of the world. It helps people to be aware of social and cultural difference, and to overcome conflict to find a peaceful solution to protect heritage in all parts of the world. In closing, I would like to express my sincere thanks to the committee for your trust and confidence in me and my election as chairperson. It is a great pleasure for me working with you in the implementation of such a prestigious instrument as the World Heritage Convention. Furthermore, I very much appreciate the continuous commitment of UNESCO, its Director General, and the Director of the World Heritage Center and his staff.
Passage Interpreting. Passage 1. Chinese to English Interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
100年前，北京师范大学的前身京师大学堂师范馆开始招生，开启了中国现代高等师范教育的先河。100年来，伴随着中国人民为争取民族独立、国家富强和人民幸福而奋斗的历程，北京师范大学不断成长和发展。北师大的师生们曾积极投身于五四、一二九等反帝反封建的革命运动，表现了崇高的爱国主义精神。在新文化运动中，北师大成为传播新思想和提倡新文化的重要阵地。100年来，北师大的广大师生以对祖国和人民的高度责任感，努力实践学为人师、行为示范的校训，形成了爱国进步、诚信质朴、求真创新、为人师表的优良传统。北师大已经发展成为师资力量雄厚、学术声誉远播的著名学府，并正在向以教师教育为主要特色的世界知名的高水平大学迈进。当今世界，科技进步日新月异，国际竞争日趋激烈，各国之间的竞争说到底是人才的竞争，是民族创新能力的竞争。教育是培养人才和增强民族创新能力的基础，必须放在现代化建设的全局性战略性重要位置。我们要继续坚定不移地实施科教兴国战略，不断培养大批合格的有中国特色社会主义的建设者，不断造就大批具有丰富创新能力的高素质人才，不断提高全民族的思想道德素质和科学文化素质，这是实现中华民族伟大复兴的必然要求，也是我国社会主义教育事业的历史任务。贯彻党的教育方针，推进教育创新，培养大批高素质人才，离不开教师的辛勤工作。这里，我对全国广大教师提几点希望。希望我们的教师志存高远，爱国敬业，希望我们的教师为人师表，教书育人，希望我们的教师严谨笃学，与时俱进。百年大计，教育为本，教育大计，教师为本。中华民族素有尊师重教的优良传统，在老师面前，做学生的不论走到哪里，做出了什么业绩，对老师的感激和爱戴之情永远不会改变。 我国广大教师，特别是广大农村和边远贫困地区的教师，在艰苦清贫的条件下，恪尽职守，默默耕耘，为祖国的教育事业无私奉献，涌现出了许多可歌可泣的先进人物，充分体现了陶行知先生，我国20世纪初著名的教育家，当年倡导的捧着一颗心来，不带半根草去的崇高精神。我国已经进入了全面建设小康社会，加快推进社会主义现代化的新的发展阶段，正在向现代化建设第三步战略目标迈进。在亿万人民为把我国建设成为富强、民主、文明的社会主义现代化国家而进行的伟大奋斗中，我国广大青年一定可以大有作为。